Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 098. Yes, we are getting closer and closer to episode 100. I just hope I'm going to be able to live up to my own expectations for that episode. Hope everybody out there is having a good day, good week, as it were. Students are all back at school, so it means busy, busy, busy in work. So that's kind of fun, you know, keeps you up, keeps you about, you know what I mean? So everybody who works in the education industry knows exactly what I mean. When the students come back, I mean, you thought you were busy before, but it's just, there's nothing to compare to it once they come back, and it's question after question after question, and it's just, I don't know, at the end of the day, I have simultaneous feelings of being, you know, beat to hell and having actually accomplished something. I mean, even if it's just resetting a couple people's passwords throughout the day, you know, as the main thing I remember, at least I can point to any one thing and say, yeah, that's what I did today. It's kind of a weird place to be for an IT professional, because unless you're building systems or something like that, there's not always tangible evidence at the end of the day, so it's a little hard to do. Hope everybody out there is having a good week, as I said. We have an interesting show for you today. We have the fruits of our labors on the caffeinated vodka. Hopefully you'll like that towards the end of the show. Please, all the people being of legal drinking age, to try it out. We have a great lineup of tech tidbits set up for you today. A little bit of general information as per usual. Lovely little bits of caffeinated news today. And then we have our standard music back. The PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, has provided us with two wonderful songs for today. One from an artist you've heard before and one from you haven't. At least I don't think you have. But still, hopefully everybody out there will be able to enjoy the music for today's show. And you know what else we enjoy? We enjoy having a sponsor around here. These days, whether you're in business or you simply want to share something with family or friends, email and voicemail just aren't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, an online meeting solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business associates, family, and your friends. GoToMeeting makes it easy to provide training and share information with coworkers, family, and friends. All you need is your PC, an internet connection, and a phone. You invite people to meet you online. Your attendees see your computer screen on their monitors, and best of all, you can meet as long as you want, as often as you need, for one flat rate. Just don't take my word for it, though. Try it for yourself, free for 45 days, no credit cards required. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and type in the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, the Try It Free button, and the promo code PODCAST. That's try GoToMeeting free today. Alright, hopefully everybody is alright with all the content we have here today. I'm a little bit jazzed, a little bit hyper, a little bit caffeinated today. I have no clue why. I'm exhausted. The boy woke up at, 3:45 this morning. Now, he has this lovely little feature. I don't know if it's built in. Maybe it's because he has the whole XY chromosome thing going on. But on the nights where I'm supposed to get up for him, he usually sleeps through the night. The nights where my wife gets up for him, not so much. So, I don't know exactly what happens, but every once in a while, he just picks, like, the worst possible time. Last night, I just couldn't get to sleep, so I was up till, like, you know, around 1:30. He wakes up at 4:45, like a half hour before the alarm's supposed to go off. It's like, oh, my. You couldn't just wait a little bit longer? I don't even remember what time it was this morning exactly, but it was like, by the time I got back to bed, it was maybe like 20 minutes of sleep left, but you know, I'm not giving that up. I don't mind if he wakes up, you know, 15, 20 minutes before we're supposed to get up. It doesn't bother me at all. So hopefully you're going to hear him on the upcoming shows. He's starting to yak a little bit, so it's kind of fun to listen to. Yeah, he was on a show not too long ago, but we have, like, differing schedules right now. We're actually recording this right now while my wife's out with the boy, so hopefully we'll be able to get it done so I can still spend some time with him tonight. Figure we might want to start off with an interesting little bit of PodSafe music from Ethereal. You've heard her here before on the podcast. She's a wonderful friend of the show. She's linked up to us on her webpage. You can find her at myspace.com/etherealvox. That's ethereal vox.com. myspace.com/etherealvox. You know, I think I might want to slow down just a little bit. I think I'm getting ahead of myself. All right, well, anyway, here's her brand new song just released this January. It's called Devil's Hand. Has a little bit of a long intro, so hopefully you're enjoying it as you're listening to it right now. But again, here's Ethereal with her song Devil's Hand. Hope you like it. So again, that was Ethereal and her song Devil's Hands, brand new, so you can head on over to our MySpace page and check it out, or you can click on the link in our show notes. And if you're listening to this podcast on the stream over the Tech Podcast Network, you can find it at www.caffinaton.com. There's a little link there with Ethereal's name, and just click on that, and it'll send you on over to the PodSafe Music Network and her profile therein. So hopefully you enjoyed that. We're kind of trying to switch up the kinds of music that we have out there, because I realized I got into a little bit of a rut, and I need a little bit of feedback. People need to send me in what you think of the music we've been playing here. I don't mean the stuff in the background. I mean, that can change, that can come, that can go. I mean, and I think pretty much we're set with the intro to the show. I like the little funkified Mario remix thing going on. But we're looking for more information about the music that we play here on the show. What kind of music do you like? Do you like rock? Do you like rhythm and blues? Do you like hip-hop? I mean, whatever. We'll play some stuff as long as it's clean. Doesn't matter to me. Let's see. First off, we're going to rock out the tech tidbits here today. Now, there's been a whole lot of problems recently with nuclear proliferation, so I'm just going to run right through this story here. I just thought it was kind of weird. Apparently, there's something called the Doomsday Clock, and every time we get closer and closer to the ultimate end that is nuclear elimination, or the ultimate destruction of mankind, life as we know it on this planet, a group, I forget what the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, moves the clock closer to the proverbial midnight. So when this originally debuted, I believe it was somewhere in 1945, they say we were at for the fourth time since the end of the Cold War, the clock has ticked forward, this time from 11:53 to 11:55. But what struck me about this wasn't that, you know, like, okay, we're that much closer to nuclear obliteration. No. It was rather the format the clock took. Yeah, the way they showed it was there was a placard on an easel with a stationary number that looked more like an ad for the Nintendo Wii than it did like the ultimate doomsday clock. They really needed to get a graphic designer or something in there. I mean, I know I'm missing the entire overarching view of this thing here, but they really need to get somebody in there to make this clock a little bit scary. I mean, they had that really cool looking ancient clock they found in the Mediterranean. They could have thrown a couple of those gears up on there, make this thing look kind of interesting, or actually make a physical clock that would be the Doomsday Clock. You know, put a couple radiation symbols on it or something like that. But no, they just stuck with the traditional 1945 presentation of a of an easel and a placard. So you can head on over to CNN.com to check that out. Kind of thought it was a little bit hokey, especially for this day and age. You know, we're a podcast, for God's sake. We're trying to show all the best in technology. You know, this is a high-octane world of tunes and tech, coffee and all things caffeine. This isn't placards on an easel. But still, I thought I should throw it out there as it fits in the whole offbeat news kind of thing. Can you tell I've had more than a little bit of coffee? I do believe that my brain always kind of skips ahead of my mouth whenever this happens, but still, I'm highly caffeinated today, so hopefully you're enjoying this. All right, now the next thing is an article that I really hated to retitle when I put it up on the blog there, but it's called from Wired.com, Wired Magazine. I actually have the article upstairs, but this is called One Giant Screw-Up for Mankind. All right, now when you think of defining moments within the NASA space program, what do you think? You think maybe the first time somebody left the orbit of our fair blue globe. You think of the landing on the moon. You think of pretty much that's it since 1969. Yeah, there have been a couple interesting experiences in outer space, a couple cool pictures taken, but there really haven't been very many landmarks since that. So you'd think they'd want to keep that footage. Not really. Apparently, somebody designed a special camera just to be taken with the lunar lander onto the moon. Now, this was not the standard TV resolution or anything like that. Completely designed from the ground up to take the zero G and the multiple Gs of liftoff and come back. It was kind of like an all-in-one little design experiment. So now there were three locations on the planet that were set up to receive transmissions as soon as Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon. Now, I'm not old enough to remember this, but I've seen the footage a couple times, and the footage, you know, to be quite frankly, looks like crap. There's no real, it doesn't have a special quality to it, at least to me. I mean, I'm from the generation of high def, I guess you could say, but still, when you're looking at it, it's like, oh my God, he's on a different planet. couldn't they get a better camera to capture it? I mean, when you look at the still pictures, they're gorgeous. I mean, they're unbelievable. I mean, it captures the majesty of the moment. But the video really doesn't do it justice. So I was wondering, you know, with all the other experiences and all the other things that NASA was working on, don't you think they might have wanted to build a better camera? Well, apparently the camera wasn't the problem. Well, what happened was, when he landed on the moon and they were getting ready for the first moon walk, as it were, they decided to link up with the nearest station, which happened to be in Australia. So they link up to the Australia station. They accept the feed from the camera on the moon. The Australia station then transfers that feed to Houston, up to a satellite and back down, I'm pretty sure. But through that, it's kind of like taking a copy of a copy. There's a lot of signal loss here. So if you hear a cat in their background right now, that's not signal loss. That's actually my cat complaining for some odd reason, but still. There was a lot of signal degradation over this massive jump, and nobody really caught it. So, like, when the guy who designed the cameras watching the picture on TV, he's going, man, that's not really what I expected the footage to look like. But he was in Houston, so all the footage that he was seeing coming in and all the footage being broadcast to millions of people across the world is the same stuff. Well, apparently a whole bunch of guys got together every year down in Australia, and one of the guys had a picture of the monitor for the video coming in from the lunar lander. The picture was so much clearer that it's the difference between night and day. It's like trying to take your old free digital camera that you got when you first signed up to Earthlink in 1999, you know, the megapixel camera, as in singular megapixel, take that outside during dusk, take a picture of a kid running by. You're going to get a giant blur. You take one of the, you know, nice new SLR cameras outside right now, what do you get? You get a picture of a kid running by at dusk. I mean, that's how big of a difference this was. And he says, okay, so where's all the film? Well, apparently Australia, thank God, made a copy. The base down there actually made a copy. Promptly sent it to headquarters in NASA, where it was transferred to someplace in Maryland and then lost. Yes, one of the most pivotal and defining moments in our space program was lost. And it wasn't just because, you know, of government bureaucracy, cutbacks and all this other stuff. No. There was an even funnier way that it's lost. Apparently, the tapes that they recorded these things on, nobody thought to update them. Nobody thought to move them to a new format or anything like that. No. They're all on the still. They're still on the same old information, the same old tapes and everything like that. And there was only one machine on the planet capable of reading this format. NASA was trying to throw it away. So it's just one debacle after another. You really need to head on over there and read the whole article, and you can actually see some of the pictures. You know, they have, you know, the QuickTime VR. That's not what you're looking for. They actually have comparative studies between the photographs then and the photographs. You know, like, they have a photograph, the photograph that the guy had of the screen, which is clear as day. It's like looking out the window at a guy walking by in a spacesuit. Then they have the picture of the TV footage, which was a blur outside a window. That's how bad this is. So you really need to head on over there and check it out. So Australia did their job. They captured this moment for prosperity, and the United States promptly lost it. That's just depressing. That's what that is. And then, in keeping with the whole space thing here, anybody out there who remembered the old, not very old, it was mid-90s, there was a cartoon called The Animaniacs, and they had this song in there called, It's a Great Big Universe. So they're they go through the entire thing, but the refrain is, it's a great big universe, but we're all really puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. Well, there's a link from over at mopo.ca, and what it is, it's a perspective of the Earth as seen from 4 billion miles away. This was photographed by Voyager 1 on June 6th of 1990. You really need to take a picture of this. This object that we made, this object that we created, flew so far away from us that we are less than a speck on the screen. They had to circle it so you would know where we are. It's very humbling when you sit there and look at it and go, wow, we're somewhere over there. And the funny thing is, they had to make the circle big enough so that people could see it, but at the same point in time, they probably also encompassed like 1,600 other little star systems. It's really kind of depressing, but still. Let's see what else we have out there. That's about the end of the space talk for today, but we do have one little video thing that I think you need to hear. Now, it's very rare that I'll actually play a video clip just so you can hear the audio. But in case everybody out there didn't know, if you remember, AT&T Wireless was bought by the American carrier Cingular. Cingular has recently somehow been acquired by Bell South, or was acquired by Bell South and is now part of AT&T again. So AT&T owns everything again. Here to explain it a little bit better is one Stephen Colbert. So let me know what you think of this. I was like, maybe I'll just put the link up and try and describe it. No. I can't do it with the flair and the panache that this man does. So hopefully you'll be able to see it any day now. I didn't want to just boot it up because I knew that if I had it playing in the background, you're going to start hearing him talk over me. And as it is right now, you're not hearing anything. But I think we just got it. There we go.
Meanwhile, big news in the telecom industry. Cingular is changing its name to AT&T. It is a crushing blow to those of us who have come to love the Cingular trademark, whatever the hell that is. As you no doubt remember, Cingular was co-owned by Bell South and SBC, which had been Southwestern Bell and Ameritech, which before that had been Illinois Bell, Wisconsin Bell, Michigan Bell, Ohio Bell, and Indiana Bell. All of those used to be AT&T. A couple of years ago, Cingular bought AT&T Wireless and renamed it Cingular, but then SBC bought AT&T and changed its own name to AT&T. Then that new AT&T bought Bell South, changing its name to AT&T, making it only logical to turn Cingular into AT&T. And down here, too. In other words, thanks to America's antitrust efforts, the country has gone from this to this. Yes. AT&T is the T-1000 of corporations. No matter how many pieces you break it into, it always comes back together. So, buy AT&T? No.
All right, so that was pretty much Stephen Colbert's explanation of what just happened. About the only thing you couldn't get from just hearing the audio on that, I would really hope that you would go over there and check it out. It's a really funny piece. I personally love Stephen Colbert. I like his delivery. I like his entire show. A little bit better than Jon Stewart because he's much more of a deadpan delivery as opposed to Jon Stewart. You can tell he's a comedian. He always has that sly grin. But it's really worth it. About the only thing you could tell, he said, thanks to Americans' antitrust efforts, we went from this to this. 1980s, it showed America everything was blue. They had the old AT&T Death Star looking logo. Then 2000s, they had same America, all blue. The logo just changed, and now it's AT&T's lowercase. So really, that basically sums up what's been happening out there right now. So I kind of just thought I'd throw that out there. Also, something that's not in the show notes, but we discussed this for Sprint, so we're going to discuss it for Verizon Wireless customers. If you are a Verizon Wireless customer, they recently changed the rates on your text messaging. This constitutes a material change in your contract. So should you have been unhappy with the service Verizon Wireless provides you, you can get out of your contract, I think, from the time they announced it for the next 30 days. So as far as I know, they announced it yesterday or maybe the day before. So for the next 30 days, you should be able to get out of the contract without paying that $150 or $175 fee. Kind of interesting, but still, if you're itching to get out of the contract and you just want to prepare yourself to get the iPhone or whatever you want to do, you should be able to do it. You just throw out on Google material search or material change Verizon contract. Some people reported having some problems doing this, but it's written into your contract. Should they make a change in the rates or anything like that, anything substantial, you can get out of the contract free and clear. So there you go. All right, over on to another little bit of DRM nonsense. Apple, a company long held for its like steel vice-like grip on its own digital rights management, is pondering opening up this, shocker, to companies that are within its Made for iPod logo, so within its Made for iPod program, so they'd be able to develop stereo receivers and things like that. They're just not going to do it to other MP3 players, you know, what we all would like them to do. Still, it's kind of interesting, so I thought I'd throw out the link there. And we also wanted to bring you up to date on a little bit of a story I didn't really want to cover on the blog, but it's just, it has legs. There's been so many people talking about this that I should kind of throw it out there. And let me bring you up to speed here a little bit. There was a radio contest in on the west coast of the United States. It was called Hold Your Wee for a Wee. Basically, contestants were forced or asked to drink large quantities of water and refrain from going to the bathroom for several hours. Person who held out the longest was able to get a Nintendo Wii. This happened about a week or so ago. The second place contestant, the unfortunate thing is she didn't even win. It's unfortunate the circumstances, everything else about the story, but the fact that she didn't even win makes this really bad. At least I don't know. It seems heartless, but still, I'm coming from a good place with it, shall we say? I'm trying to anyway. As she was driving home, she started complaining of headaches and major issues with pain in her head. Unresponsive. She passed away from water intoxication. So if you drink too much water, the electrolytes and all the other balancing salts and minerals within your body no longer function correctly and your brain swells. So not a lot of people know, but she only drank around 2 gallons of water, but within 3 hours. That's a lot of water. That dilutes your system. That causes all kinds of problems. So just kind of word to the wise. They've recently, the radio station involved, which apparently had the number one morning talk show or morning slot in L.A., has fired 10 people from the radio staff, including the 3 DJs who were involved. This is kind of like a public service announcement to anybody in radio. It's like, you know what? Before you throw a contest out there and you ask people to do things, because, I mean, let's admit it, people are usually dumb. Before you do that, before you're asking people to do something, you might want to see if it'll hurt them first. But, you know, I mean, not a lot of people know about water intoxication, so I figure I'd throw the message out there. And the really, really unfortunate part about this entire thing is that she was a mother of 3 children. So, I mean, she was trying to win the game system for her children. So, you know, that's going to be in the back of their minds, and that's really a horrifying thing to think about. So, we're going to move on, hopefully, just save somebody else that little announcement there. But there are consequences to it, so hopefully... the litigious nature of our society, the family's probably going to end up owning the radio station sooner or later, but still. Now, there's another thing out there, which, completely different direction, completely different topic. OS X, I don't know if you know this, but there's a couple different formats that discs can come in. That's basically how the files are arranged on the disc. You can have the FAT format, which is done by file allocation table. It's pretty much a very old format at this point. But if you have like a thumb drive or something like that, it's pretty much guaranteed that that's going to be formatted with FAT. So Windows and Macs can read FAT. All modern Windows PCs should be formatted on NTFS partitions. I know I'm throwing a lot of letters and everything out there, but what this basically means is it's just a certain way of organizing the files that allows them to have security permissions with them. Macs can read NTFS, but Macs cannot write to NTFS. I actually had a student come into me the other day, and we were working on trying to get his files off of the server onto his drive, and he had to actually go home and bring in burnable DVDs because he had all of his information on an NTFS external drive. Well, there's a workaround with a program called Fuse that's trying to get NTFS to be writable on a Mac. So I just thought I'd throw that out there, because I know we have a bunch of people who listen to the show who are Mac heads, who definitely spend most of their life using that kind of machinery, so definitely want to throw that out there, and hopefully that'll work out. And I know if this actually works out, it's going to make my job so much easier and work, because I'm not going to have to worry about what kind of disk a student brings into me. I'll be able to help them access it either way, so... let's see, what else do we have up next? Quick little thing here, because we are running long yet again, but hey, that's fine. We had a real short show the other night. Sony throws down a really big machine. Apparently this new thing, it's a quad-core machine. I'll explain that in a minute. But it's $9,000. This is an end-all machine. This machine is a breaker. It can chews programs up and spits them out. That means for every CPU that's on this machine, there are 4 miniature CPUs on it for all intrinsic purposes. So for every chip that you have on there, there's 4 other chips. So the computer thinks that it has 4 CPUs when you only have 1 chip on there. Apparently it's a dual quad core. So that means it thinks that there are 8 processors on there. That is a beefy machine. Maximum of 3 gigs RAM. I mean, this thing, like, chews things up and spits them out. It's unbelievable. The only problem is Sony designed it, and yeah, it's kind of weird looking. It looks kind of like a wall unit for an air conditioner. I'd love to be able to play with it, but it's... It just really looks bad. I mean, from all the things that Sony's designed, and I was like, wow, you know, I've always been in awe of their design. This is hardly one of them. This is actually a pretty ugly machine. This looks like something out of the, you know, 1970s you would stick in your wall in your parents' basement to try and get a little bit of fresh air down there. So we're just going to move right along. Next thing we have up here before the last little bit of tech tidbits today, I know we're over 30 minutes just on tech tidbits. No more regrets, at least via email. There's a new program out there called Big String. Now, I'm not sure how exactly this works, but I'm going to read a little bit of the write-up that they have over at the Sci-Fi blog. So that's blog.sci-fi.com/tech. How many times have you sent an email and immediately wished that you could change something in it or take it back entirely? Sure, at 3 a.m. after a bottle of whiskey, it might have seemed like a great idea to email your entire office those photos of you flexing with your shirt off. But in the morning light, that doesn't seem like the best decision you've ever made. End quote. Now, I've sent out emails and everything like that, and one of the worst things was I was actually applying to a job at the Philadelphia Zoo when I was still looking for jobs, and... I sent everything out. I had my resume meticulously edited. Everything was wonderful. And, you know, I'm just looking at it. I'm going, this is the perfect cover letter. This is the perfect resume. I spelled the woman's name wrong, and I realized it. Not only did I do it in the subject, because you were supposed to include the woman's name in the subject, I spelled her name wrong in the subject. I spelled it wrong in the dear so-and-so, and I thanked her with the wrong name, and I realized it as soon as I clicked send. So what could I do? I did what anybody else would do, and I sent an email apologizing, and, you know, my resume went right in the trash. So there's now something called Big String. Basically, it allows you to pull email back. I don't know if it has to be before the people have viewed it, but you can actually change it. It's called a retractable email. Now, this is kind of interesting, and you can... You can basically, you know, throw it out there, pull it back so it doesn't appear in their inbox. I don't know how it works, but it's kind of interesting. You can edit emails on the sly. You can change things around so the recipient never gets any notification that you did anything. Not very cool, but not very cool from a business standpoint, but very cool from a person who makes a lot of mistakes standpoint, which is me. I'm going to be checking that out a little bit, so hopefully you'll find that interesting if we can get a little bit more information about that. Want to talk a little bit about a story we broke earlier today. During my lunch hour, I found something out, so I quick wrote something up and threw it up. From the founders of Kazaa and Skype comes a new service called Juiced. It's a internet TV revolution, basically. You can pick whatever you want to watch, whenever you want to, and it's all on your screen. Content providers have to actually sign up to it. If you go to thecaffeination.com, the article directly below this episode is going to have the full stories. You can sign up for the beta, the whole nine yards. Sorry about that little disconnect there. If you hear a little pop or a click or anything right there, it's because a wife and kid came home, had to go up, say hi, and had one of the coolest experiences, just had to share it with everybody. I was upstairs sitting on the living room floor with Paul, and he had his little Elmo doll just off to the side. And he's around 4 months now, so he's just starting to roll over a little bit. And this is the first time I've ever actually seen somebody thinking something through. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. He's looking over at Elmo going, all right, I gotta get over there. So he pulls his feet up, flips over as hard as he can, and it just doesn't quite make it. So he inches over until he's almost right there, and I put my hand out, and he grabbed onto the hand as he was coming over. Probably by accident, doesn't matter. And he flipped himself over and sat on, basically sitting right on top of Elmo. It was just the coolest thing I've ever seen. Sorry, had to say that. And then the last thing we have here for tech tidbits today is a little bit of tidbit. Apparently today, let me see how many years ago this was. Today in 1929, Popeye first appeared, the comic book. Yes, the comic book, later the animated TV series and everything like that. So it was kind of crazy, kind of cool. I just thought I'd throw it out there. I thought it was really interesting. I used to love the animated shorts that were on TV, so I thought a couple other people might get a kick out of it. There's a link over there, the Wikipedia article on Popeye, so you can enjoy that at your leisure. On to a little bit of the general information. This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also proudly listed over at blueberry.com. That's B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. That's Blueberry without the E's. It's a social podcasting network site. If you're listening to this show on the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network, then you can find it at www.caffinaton.com. If you'd like to dig our show, you can head on over to the show notes and click that, or dig.com/podcasts/thecaffeination podcast with underscores where there should be spaces. You're probably not going to remember that, so if you head on over to Caffeination, you will find it. All right, now just for our last little bit of PodSafe music, here we have a new band that I just found on the PodSafe Music Network called Third Culture. It's a great little alternative rock band, decided to expand the rock genre a little bit that we've been playing here. I'm a real big fan of rock. If you haven't noticed by now, I like blues rock, I like hard rock, I like metal, I like all over the spectrum. I actually also like bluegrass and a couple other different things. I'm not really big into hip-hop, but I do like, techno and electronica and a little bit of trance and house music and stuff like that. But I'm really big into rock most of the time, and every once in a while when I find a band that I really have to share with the group, I decide, you know what, that's why I have a podcast. Share what I like with other people. So again, here's Third Culture from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, with their song Like I Used To. Let me know what you think of this one.
Say what we do.
Third Culture and their song Like I Used To, so I hope you enjoyed that one. Really good kind of alternative rock, kind of a great heavy beat to it, and, you know, like a really distinct and well-defined beat. Yeah, sorry, I think I'm actually running down on the caffeine right now. I don't know what's wrong with me. All right, but we have right here the rest of the caffeinated bits. Like I promised, we have the complete rundown on what flavored vodka is and how you can create your own. So hopefully you'll enjoy this. I'm going to give you a rundown on the article that I actually just wrote. I'm calling it Kafka, or Kafka if you really want to, but hopefully you'll enjoy it. And it doesn't seem to be coming up right now. But I also submitted this article over to ineedcoffee.com, and I was just told that it was actually accepted, so hopefully you'll get to see it over there at the end of this month. But here's the recipe without further ado. So basically, in case you didn't know, there's flavored vodkas out there. This isn't like a syrup or anything, and it's added to the vodka to actually make it taste differently. No, this is actually an infusion, so you take another flavor and you place it into the vodka. Now it can run as simple as taking a stick of cinnamon, throwing it in a bottle of vodka and waiting a little bit. I mean, that's quite frankly very simple and very easy to do. I was like, you know what I want? That ended rather abruptly. You know what I want to do? What I want to do is I want to make coffee flavored vodka. But I really didn't want to grind the coffee and throw it in there, because I thought that would make kind of a nasty, gritty taste to it, and you might not be able to get all the grounds out. I also didn't want to throw whole beans in there, so what I wanted to do was actually I cracked the beans in between two spoons and then threw them in the jar. And so here's basically how you go about it. You crack almost like a handful of coffee beans, you know, like 10 or 15 at a shot, and you put them in a little pile. You take 1 teaspoon of sugar, and you throw it into the bottle. The sugar's a catalyst. It kind of, you know, mixes with the vodka and mixes with the coffee and pulls the aromatics out of the coffee while leaving the oils in the coffee. Now, I can't say this enough how good this vodka is after the fact. So, I use dark roast coffee beans because there's a lot more flavor. It has a good flavor profile, if you know what I'm saying. So, and I use middle of the road vodka. I'm not going like rock gut. I'm not going, you know, like, you know, three for a gallon or something like that. No, but I'm also not going, you know, like $50 a bottle here. I mean, we're talking like $15 for a bottle like Smirnoff. It's not like really, really good vodka, but then again, it's not really bad vodka either. I know a lot of Russian guys who are going to disagree with me, but still, for most of the Russian guys that I know, they don't really like Smirnoff vodka. It doesn't taste very good to them. Also, a tip off to the side, if you have bad vodka that you'd like to make into better vodka, what you can do is you take a Brita water filter, you can run the vodka through the Brita water filter, and it actually filters it. It does what it would do to a normal, like what it would do to tap water. And the more times you run it through it, the cleaner and the less impurities that are still in the vodka. So that's neither here nor there, but there you go. So what you do is you take all this stuff, you mix it in a clear glass jar with the vodka, and then you put it in a clean, dark place or a cool, dark place. You don't want to heat this up at all. Every day I take it out and I agitate it. You know, I don't sit there and yell nasty things at it or anything, but you shake it up real good until it looks kind of milky. Then you let it settle. After about 5 days, you can take this out of the freezer or wherever else you have it, and then you filter it. And I have a whole system set up there, so you can see it all. It's in pictures and everything. But you filter it out, and I gotta say, this is one of the best tasting alcohols I've ever had. Not just because, you know, I started out with rather plain vodka and rather good coffee, but you know, I'm just really surprised how well this turned out. So I've already made like 2 batches. I'm actually probably going to make a little bit more. I might start making it as presents for some of my friends who like it, so we'll see exactly how that goes. You can head on over to thecaffeination.com. It's under the recipes section, or it's down on the left hand side. There's actually a link to it in today's show notes, so hopefully you'll enjoy that. This is an absolutely unbelievable recipe. I'm really like amazed at how well it turned out. And not very many things that I try just on a whim actually work really well. So here we go. All right, and then I have an article up here from it's a article from theguardian.co.uk. It's about the density of Starbucks chains. Apparently there used to be a section on Starbucks website that you could go starbucks.com/locator, and what it would do is it would which, by the way, as of the reading of this article, they've disabled it because there's so many people talking about this, but Sorry. Apparently, according to this article, within 5 miles of this guy's house, there were 164 Starbucks. Very disturbing. I mean, that's way too much coffee concentrated in one place. I mean, that's coming from a guy who runs a podcast about coffee. That's pretty sad. So just thought I should let you know, try and frequent other establishments if you're a Starbucks kind of person. I'm not really. I mean, I like some other stuff. Not a real big fan of their plain coffee, and I judge a place by its plain coffee. Oh, by the way, a moment of silence, please. The eatery that I frequented on campus since I was actually in 10th grade. I went to high school suitably close enough to the college where I attended and the college which I now work at, so that I was able to actually go to this place to eat. And, you know, they had the best cheesesteaks that I've ever had. Moment of silence, please. They closed up and they sold it to a different person. So no more dollar cups of coffee. It's damn fine coffee, but a moment of silence, please. Yeah. That, like I said, very good coffee. It is sorely missed. Now I'm just going to have to go up and down the little strip there and see who has the next best coffee, because my buddies are gone. So, all right, that just about wraps it up for this year for Caffeination 098. This has been a wonderful episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Content rich, shall we say. All right, so again, we're going to give you a little bit of rundown. If you're listening to this podcast on the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network, then you can find it at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. If you have comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to send our way, you can send that to caffeination@gmail.com. You can sign up on our website to receive weekly or emails for every show. There's a little register button, gives us your email address. We'll be able to forward stuff out to you. It's kind of cool. You can go over to myspace.com/caffeination to get the updates over there. You can listen to the podcast, a whole bunch of different things. If you go over to our personal blog at www.puzzlepiecepro.com/blog, you'll find interesting stuff over there as well. So hopefully everybody enjoyed this show. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.